Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, my old friend, the last guy I ever traveled with in the WWE, Hurricane Helms is going to be here. That's right. Shane Helms, Gregory Helms, all them damn Helmses is here. And you're going to hear some of our infamous road stories and about Hurricane's debut in WWE. He's the first to admit it didn't go exactly as planned, and you'll hear why. You also hear the story about how Hurricane became a thing, who came up with it, how it started, why it got so over. He's talking about the Hurra League with Lance Storm, Citizen Storm. He's really setting the record straight as well about what happened between him and Buff Bagwell right after WWE bought WCW. And then there's TNA. Hurricane is now an agent with TNA, and he's talking about how the company's doing, what he thinks they could be doing better, and what, in his opinion, is working well. Very funny conversation with Hurricane Helms. But first, you guys know the drill. I couldn't do this sponsor at all if not for two things, the sponsors and you guys supporting the sponsors. And that includes DDP, DDP Yoga, and the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. I was watching it last night. It's such a good piece of film, such a good piece of work. Jake is such a character, but man, was he ever a mess. Show some of the stuff he did before DDP kind of flew him into Atlanta and put him in the accountability crib to get him off of drugs and alcohol, get him into yoga, get him in shape. He couldn't even bend over. He couldn't even hardly stand. He couldn't even hardly walk. It's quite pathetic when you first start seeing in what bad shape Jake was in, and then very inspirational to see how great he ends up being. Page saved his life, no doubt about it, and he documented the whole thing on this incredible film, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray, and the collector's edition is loaded with extras. DDP has 20 bonus features on the DVD release, including a commentary track, which is very interesting, with himself, Jake, and director Steve Yu. And I can't stress it enough, this is not just a wrestling documentary. It's the story about a man trying to put his life, his career, and his family back together. DDP brought Jake to the accountability crib in Atlanta, Georgia, spent over 3 years helping Jake overcome his addiction problems, reuniting with his family, reclaiming his health, and getting his life and career back. DDP and his crew filmed Jake's journey, and you can see the incredible, inspiring story for yourself. Seriously, one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, and not just because I'm in it, which I am. I did a great job, by the way. You'll laugh and cry. You'll get mad at Jake, and then you'll cheer for him as well. And trust me, you'll be inspired at the end of this documentary. You're going to want to do DDP Yoga yourself. And right now, you can get the collector's edition of The Resurrection of Jake the Snake at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And if you use my promo code Y2J, you'll get 10% off anything you buy for a limited time. You've got to see this documentary. You got to be inspired, and you got to give DDP Yoga a try yourself. And, of course, the amazing technologically advanced DDP Yoga Now app. Okay, you got to try that as well. Take advantage of this special deal, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Use the promo code Y2J. You get 10% off anything you buy at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. It's going to change your life. Check it out now. I also want to talk quickly about the food fight that we had on Monday Night Raw. A lot of times you'll be thinking, food fight, what the heck's going on? And it's great because I had an amazing tour of Japan and Hawaii. Such an awesome time, and thanks to everybody who came and saw us there. Worked with Shinsuke Nakamura the first night in Tokyo, and the second night worked with a three-way with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, which was just amazing as well. We did it a little bit differently. Rather than just the two bad guys beating up the good guy, we did it as like one long 15-minute three-way high spot. So it's something I'd never seen before, and it worked out really, really good. It was funny in Hawaii as well. I came to the ring. It was a four-way match, me versus AJ versus Seth versus Dean. And I came to the ring, and I was just talking a bit, you know, like, hey, I'm doing a little typical heel promo. We haven't been in Hawaii in 6 years, and I hope we don't come back for another 6 years because this place is a dump. You're talking about your aloha and your mahalo and your lava lava and your mahi mahi. Who gives a crap? And then I look in the crowd and say to nobody in particular, what'd you say? Mahu? Just kind of said, like, pointed at a non-existent person and accused that non-existent person of saying mahu, which is a term kind of like I guess you'd say kind of like a lady boy or something like that in Hawaiian, mahu. So then, of course, everyone starts chanting, mahu, mahu. And I'm like, oh, really, mahu? I don't know what mahu means. But if you're chanting about me, it must be good. So you're right. I am a mahu. I'm a huge mahu. I'm the biggest mahu on this island, man. And everyone's just cheering, of course, laughing their heads off. And saw a couple of people the next day going, do you know what mahu means? I know what it means. It's all show business. So anyways, we had these great three nights in Hawaii and in Tokyo. Rocked it all night long in Tokyo, singing karaoke with Xavier Woods and Doc Amen and the whole crew. We had a really great time. Then landed in Columbus and went to the July 4th edition of Raw, Independence Day. Happy Independence Day to everybody. And then we find out that Vince wants to have the world's largest food fight. So you guys saw it. It was pretty hilarious. And it's just so ridiculous. You go from like this awesome technical wrestling match in front of a sold-out crowd in Tokyo, Japan, to eating a plate of beans where there's a Band-Aid in it and pulling the Band-Aid out and spitting my beans all over Curtis Axel. But just so funny, man. My clothes were just destroyed, and I had this really wicked scarf on, but I didn't want to wear it because I realized it was going to get food all over it. So I took the scarf into safety, and then I got like this red, white, and blue lei that some of the guys had around their necks, like Hawaiian-style lei, and I cut it in half and tied it together with another one and made my own red, white, and blue scarf. So if you see that scarf, it's made out of a plastic lei that you put around your neck, and I just made a scarf out of it because I didn't want to destroy my own. But one of my vests is just covered and jeans are covered. So see what happens. That's the you guys want to be in pro wrestling business, get ready to be in food fights, man. That's how it works. And then we had the 16-man elimination Team World versus the Multinational Alliance, which I thought was just great. Such a Vince word. So 16-man, how do you put that together? So we figured it out and put it all together, and it was a fun match, 25 minutes long, and another day at work, man. Food fights and long matches and everyone arguing with each other in different languages. If you say that, go back and watch it on Raw. If you see that pre-tape when we start yelling at each other, I'm talking to the Lucha Dragons and Del Rio in Spanish. And then Sami Zayn joins in speaking Arabic. And then Cesaro's speaking, I think, Swiss. And Sheamus is speaking Gaelic. And Owens is speaking French. And it was just ridiculousness personified. A lot of fun. And that's what we're going to have today. A lot of fun with Hurricane Helms, my old buddy, on the road. Haven't traveled with anybody since Hurricane. And we had a lot of good times together, and we're gonna get started right now. Yeah, that's where I got that from. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Here he is, Hurricane Helms. All right, so I always ride by myself now, but my last official riding partner was Mr. Hurricane Helms sitting here with me right now. That was you're the last guy I ever rode with.
Yeah.
After I started with like six guys in a car, then five, then four, then three, and then just you and I. That was the last straw.
Was it something I did that you just said I can't ride with anybody anymore?
No, I think we got along pretty good, didn't
yeah.
we?
Yeah, we did.
I mean,
your wife was pregnant at the time.
Right.
And you always had to talk to her and stuff like that with private phone calls. I remember that.
Yeah.
And they would be long sometimes. I'd have a finger in my ear and shit.
That's kind of that kind of was probably one of the reasons why. I remember because like it's hard when you start riding by yourself to have to go back to riding with somebody.
Right.
Because it's like, I don't know, we were not sharing rooms, or were we still sharing rooms at that point in time?
No, I wasn't sharing. That was one thing I couldn't do, was share rooms with people, which... Now in TNA, I'm letting Trevor room with me, Trevor Lee, my protege.
Yeah.
And it's driving me nuts because he's an animal. But that was my whole thing. I don't room with people. That's when I need to get away. I need to escape.
Yeah.
Because we're surrounded by people all day long, as you well know. So I would always room by myself. So, every now and then, if something happened and whatever, we're in.
Dire straits.
Some weird shit. Don't you remember one time we stayed at some it almost looked like a bed and breakfast, but it was some really out in the way. We'd stopped at 10 places, and the guy was really mean to us at the front desk about smoking. And he was like, "Are you going to smoke in the room?" And you're like, "No, we don't smoke." And he's like, "Well, you can't smoke in the room." Do you remember that at all?
I'm trying to remember. I might be getting it confused with actually quite a few times stuff like that happened.
Yeah.
Because people don't understand what we have to go through when we're on the road. Because sometimes we're probably referring to is that we pull up to a town.
Yeah.
And if you go to one hotel and it's sold out, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it's not just that one hotel. You'll be going around to every hotel in the area and they're all sold out.
Now, does that still happen to you now?
It still does. But now with the invention of Hotwire.
I was going to say, with smartphones, you don't have
to worry about it anymore. Yeah. All you got to do is just plan ahead. But back in those days, there was no smart. You would just pull up in a town and try and start finding a room.
How did we get anywhere without GPS before?
Right?
I rely on that so much now. Like, if it says turn left, I turn. I don't care if there's a road there. And again, I just think about when we used to have the Rand McNally or whatever that big gimmick was.
Atlas.
Yeah, and like, how did we get anywhere?
But you just said the thing, like, we get so lazy with the technology that if it says turn left, even though you know, well, I know it's not here, but you still do it anyways just because it tells you to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're getting stupider as humans, right?
I think you don't need that information anymore, and that's kind of how the brain works. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to record that anymore, so you don't do it. There's an episode of The Office where the guy, Steve Carell, is that his name?
Steve Carell.
Carell, yeah. Where it says that just like that, and he turns into a pawn, and the guy in the passenger seat's like, "No, stop!" And he's just like, "No, this is what he says." And
I was like,
"That is totally me. If it, whatever it says, I'm doing."
That's the truth. And also, with everyone's on their smartphones and stuff, there's so much options now. You could watch TV now on your smartphone, or you could listen to any song ever. Once again, with us, we still had the cassettes,
yep,
and the radio. And you are not a rock and roll guy, per se.
Except for Nazareth.
What?
Don't you remember that was the one? I told you the story. When I was a kid, we had that big 8-track mm-hmm. player, but we only had one 8-track, and it was Nazareth, Hair of the Dog. So I know every song on that album, you know, backwards and forward.
Remember you didn't even know what Sergeant Pepper was?
Yeah, I kept calling him Captain Cold. Y'all getting hot.
Captain what?
Captain Cold, because I got confused with the names, because Hunter called La Resistance that, and he's like, "Hey, it looks like Sergeant Pepper." And I was going, "What the hell does that mean?"
And I was like, "You don't know Sergeant Pepper?" And you're like, "No, man. I don't know."
And then, like, you brought that story up like a week later. I goes, "Yeah, remember when he called him Captain Cold?" Like, I couldn't remember. I couldn't even remember what Sergeant Pepper's name was. But that's Beatles or Rolling Stones or something.
Dude, stop.
Which
it's
one?
The Beatles.
The Beatles. Okay,
it's like
good.
The Beatles' most famous album of all time, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Hey, man, I came up on Run DMC.
But what I'm getting is, so you're not really a rock guy, and I'm Run DMC. I can dig, but do you like more of the hip hop type stuff? Little John, you're the first guy I remember ever said that. Yeah. So we decided one day that we were going to go buy comedy albums,
yeah,
like comedy cassettes. And
I should get hot at you for this, by the way.
But why?
Because go ahead, tell your
version. Well, I mean, I'm just basically kind of painting the picture, because I remember we went to a store and it's like, okay, you buy three and I'll buy three or something like that. And so you chose some. So where does the hotness come from? Because I chose Adam Sandler, one of his comedy ones. I can't remember. I'm sure we'll get to it. I chose Robin Williams at the Metropolitan Opera Theater or something like this. And maybe a Cosby or something like that, or... I'm not sure what it was, but...
So you're such a Canadian. And so I get Sam Kinison,
right,
Bill Hicks, and Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
You did not even crack a smirk at that Richard Pryor.
Nothing?
And like, no, and you were howling over this Adam Sandler shit, which is just... It's okay to me. At the very best, it's okay.
Do it for your
but,
mama.
Like, Richard Pryor, you didn't even smirk. And I'm like, how in the f*** is this not funny? And you're just like, eh. You're just driving.
Was I doing it on purpose, or was it legitimate? Because I remember saying, like, I'm going to laugh if it makes me laugh. I'm not going to try and not laugh, because we were arguing.
I don't think you got it.
Because the Adam Sandler's genius. It's so funny.
No, it is stupid.
That's the idea. Fatty McGee. Hey, guys. Or the buffoon. I looked down and saw my own asshole. It freaked me out.
Yeah, an old man's ass or whatever it is. Yeah. So, I mean, there were bits and pieces, but compared to Pryor.
Yeah. Not the same.
No, not at all.
But we did love, what was the one cat's name?
Sam Kinison, you love. And I think you had never heard Bill Hicks until then. And,
yeah.
And he
was. But that wasn't the one
fabulous.
That I met in the middle. There was one that was really funny that we met in the middle. Was it Mitch?
Oh, Hedberg.
That guy was funny.
Yeah, that guy, MVP, one day said something to me. He goes, "Hey, man, do you get some of your stuff from Mitch Hedberg?" And I was going, and I never heard of him at that mm-hmm. point. And I was like, "No, I don't know who you're talking about." And I listened to him, and I swear, I thought, maybe this is me. Maybe I did this shit, and I forgot that I recorded it or something, because he had my cadence.
Yeah, same kind of accent.
Same, a bit of that twang, and it's some of the dumb shit that I say. And, like, there was, like, a couple of his bits, I literally had said them things.
Like what were some of his things?
I remember the one about, hey, you know, a snowman looks like an ant with his legs pulled off or some shit like that. And it was just some of that dumb stuff that I would say, yeah. Like, I ain't going to tell you what hotel I'm in, but it does have two trees in the name. Like, just really, like, you know, vague, silly shit.
It was the one, though, with the,
I bought an ant farm.
Yeah. They ain't grow shit.
Yeah. How about some carrots for me? Yeah. They ain't grow me shit.
They ain't grow me shit.
It's like, I went to get a donut, and they asked me if I wanted a receipt. Yeah. It's like, I do not need a receipt for a donut. I will not be returning the donut at a later time. I do not have to write the donut off in my taxes.
Yeah, he was good. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if his act would have lasted much longer than.
Well, because he died of a heroin overdose or something.
Yeah, I mean, I know his life didn't last, but I'm talking about
it's kind of a Stephen Wright type thing.
Yeah, he comes and once you get used to it, it would be. Mm-hmm. I think it would have had a short, you know.
But you're right that is kind of your sense of humor.
Like, yeah,
you kind of even incorporated that into the whole Hurricane character,
yeah.
Like real kind of almost slapsticky at times, or enunciating certain words
that shouldn't
be funny, but it is the way you delivered it.
Yeah,
you know, tell us about how the evolution of the Hurricane character even came to be.
Well, mainly because I just wore comic book shirts to TV all the time, and I had a Green Lantern tattoo on my shoulder. I think Brian Gerwitz, you know, writer and WWE head writer at the time, I think he always wanted to do a superhero character.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got that vibe. And
because he loved comic books as well.
Yeah, he loved comic books too. And you know, at that time with the WCW guys, they were experimenting with a bunch of us.
So, and just as a quick sideways, so when WCW got bought out,
mm-hmm.
what was your status at that point in time?
Well, I was the cruiserweight champion.
Okay.
So I remember the last Nitro, you know, when Shane McMahon showed up and all that shit.
Right.
And that was a pretty wild story in and of itself.
Did you know he was gonna show up?
No, they would tell us like the weirdest stories of all time.
Mm.
You know, every week it would be a different buyer, and we felt like the company was kind of working us to a degree. You know, trying to keep us happy, or at least keep
your morale up that you're gonna go somewhere.
Yeah, you don't want that bad morale. You definitely don't want that bad morale.
Right.
And I really wasn't at a position in the company where I had to worry about that shit. You know what I mean? Like,
how do you mean?
I hadn't been there that long. You know, I wasn't one of the millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm sure those guys were worried about it a lot more than I was. You know, I was just like, you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm not in those meetings. I'm not even.
Right.
You know.
All you can control is the matches.
I control is what I'm doing. And mm-hmm. I tried to do that. I just focused on what I was doing. And I had a really good run there toward the end. I had one of the best runs toward the end there with the whole Sugar Shane thing.
Yeah, they had so, dancing girls with you. And
yeah.
It was just a whole big
my little sugar babies.
And
so I was really happy with what I was doing. But we would hear different things. You know, Eric was buying it again. And, you know, we heard that Vince was buying it. And then, like, some other company was buying it. And then another company was buying it. Then Eric was coming back. We would just hear different shit every week. So we were kind of all just bored with hearing this shit. We wanted just some security and stability. But like I said, I really didn't. I was like, I can't worry about this shit. I'm going to just show up, do the best I can do every week, and that's mm-hmm. what I'm going to do. And but anyway, we got the TV that in that Panama. It was Panama City, Florida. And there was a sign on one of the doors that said, like, it was either WWE or McMahon's or something. But we still didn't believe it because they were so weird down there with, like, trying to work the boys. But we had a talent meeting, you know, one of those good talent meetings, and Shane McMahon walked in the room, and that was the, oh, shit.
Was there actually, like, a sound of, like, a, oh, or was there just silence? Or
It was silence, a little bit of, oh, but, you know, that was the paradigm shift in the business right there.
Yeah.
The war was over.
Yeah. The war was over, and the opposing general is walking into your into your headquarters.
He's walking into your bedroom and throwing your wife, throwing you out the window, getting into bed with your wife.
Yeah.
And he came in. He made some kind of weird comment toward Buff and Lex. Shane did.
Lex had walked out on WWE.
Yeah, it wasn't even weird. It was just Shane. You know, Shane, hey, Lex, Buff, how you doing?
Yeah, just
kind of that.
Yeah. Just like very Vince-esque.
A very.
Yeah.
With, almost as if he's a son. Almost. You know what I mean? And that we all caught on to that. There was no, like, that wasn't very subtle at all.
It was ribbing on the square. Just by saying hello, he's basically saying you guys are fucked.
Yeah. At least Lex.
Yeah, right.
And so then, you know, Shane gave a very good speech, you know, whatever, that they're going to, you know, they bought WCW and they're going to carry it forward. It's going to be its own thing. And we're like, okay, whatever. But we're all like, nobody knew. No matter what anybody says, nobody in that room knew what their future held after that night. So I know I got a match with Chavo, and I, you know, to defend the cruiserweight title. And I just remember thinking, man, if I get out of here with this belt, they got to bring me up. So, I was prepared to have to shoot on this motherfucker.
Right. No matter what the finish was, you're going to put the grapevine on him.
And, but
did you win the match?
Yeah, okay. I won the match. So I felt like, okay, I'm going to have a good shot to go up there, because mm-hmm. they got to at least bring all the champions, I would think. You know, and WCW was kind of known for the cruiserweight division. That was kind of one of the, as you well know.
Sure, absolutely.
Damn sure helped put that thing on the map. And so I felt good about it, but, you know, still didn't know. And I was actually the first person Johnny called. And I asked him that, but he said, oh, I'm just going, you know, you're the first person I called.
To say...
That you're hired, that we picked up your contract and bringing you in. So
okay,
so I was very happy about that. I don't know why I was the first one, but I happened to be the first one.
Yeah,
and then I was like, yeah, you know, all excited. Like you know. So then we go up there, and I had a couple house show matches at Sugar Shane, mainly like three ways with Billy Kidman and Chavo, and then when I got my TV debut now, and I know I had to have told you this, and I told. You know, on a few podcasts before, but my TV debut in WWE was not the best. It was not what I envisioned that it could have been. Because originally the plan was that I debut against Chavo, establish me as the champion, and eventually I was going to drop the belt to Kidman in Atlanta. Because Billy Kidman was definitely the bigger star at the time.
Right, yeah.
No doubt.
You know? And he had worked WCW for years and had some bigger programs. And
bigger program, and he was going on to, and then... X-Pac was the light heavyweight champion in WWE, and they were going to go combine those belts, which is what they did, and that was the goal. But when Booker and Bagwell had that disaster of a match,
that changed the entire course.
That changed everything, and so they, as a compliment to me and Billy, though, they looked at the locker room that they had for WCW, and they felt that me and Billy could go out there and do the best match, and to make it even better, they decided to just hot shot the angle. And go ahead and take the belt off me that first night. Mm-hmm. So that was my debut.
Okay.
Did I come in and just lose the cruiserweight title?
Right away.
And also, that day, they tell me I can't be Shane Helms, which I kind of had.
Why?
Because of Shane O'Mac.
Oh, okay.
And I'll leapfrog a bit of this, because when I was the Hurricane and I became the heel Gregory Helms, I finally just asked them then, because I said, well, listen, you got Chris Jericho, you got Chris Benoit, you got Christian.
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, but there's no Chris McMahon.
Nice.
I said, say no more. Gregory Helms it is. So anyway, going back, you know, I found out I can't be Shane, and therefore I can't be Sugar, because Sugar Shane was, you know, it was
the matches, yeah.
Yeah, that was the gimmick on, you know, Sugar Shane Mosley. And so I'm not going to have the Sugar Babies. I can't do the Vertebreaker because Vince is worried about it. And so now I can't have my interest music, which
as a quick segue, too. When I came into WWE and it was had the Lion Tamer, Vince didn't want to use the Lion Tamer because Shamrock had the Lion's Den, which they used like once, but he goes, there's too many lions around here. Besides, so there was a list of names.
Did he say that though?
Yeah, he did.
There's too many lions around here.
Yes. And I wrote down, they gave me a bunch of really bad names. I've documented many times, the Salad Shooter, the Rock and Roll Finisher, all this stuff. So I wrote a bunch of names of my own. And the Vertebreaker was actually one of the names that I wrote down. This is before you had the Vertebreaker. I was like, what a great name. And he didn't like that. He wanted the Walls of Jericho. So my finish was almost called the Vertebreaker.
That's awesome. That's so such a great name.
It is. It's a great name.
Fantastic.
So when you came in, Vince was scared. Like, had he seen it? Or had someone just told him about it?
I think somebody had just told him. But at the same time, there were so many neck injuries. This was after there was a string of...
Steve,
you know, Steve, Amy, Benoit,
Bob Holly,
all of them. And so they're worried about anything getting dropped on their head. I don't think he necessarily was concerned about me, but it was a pile driver type maneuver, and they were eliminating all that.
Right, right.
And so
a similar thing happened with the Styles Clash when AJ first came in.
Yep.
Vince, well, we don't know for sure, but the word was that it was banned just because of what had happened to other people. But I don't think Vince per se even knew what the move was. He just heard the name.
Right.
You know, Styles Clash hurt somebody. Well, then don't do the Styles Clash. You could do 10 Styles Clashes to him and not call it that, and he wouldn't know.
Right.
But he had just heard the rumor of it. So I wonder if it's probably the same thing with the Vertebreaker then. So,
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I'm not certain he really knew who I was. Yeah. You know?
So no vertebrae, and then you can't be
So no Shane, no sugar, no sugar babies, no vertebrae, no entrance music.
Because that was.
And I'm not going to have my whole entrance because of the girls, and I'm going to drop the title on that night. And I was like, holy.
why? Like, so who came? Who told you you were Gregory Helms?
Stephanie. But she was so cool about it, man. She was very, you know, supportive and nice. And she's like, I know this seems like we're taking a lot from you, but, you know, we like you. This is, you know, just this. Don't worry about it. You know, she's super sweet. And I just remember that because I needed a super supportive voice at that particular moment. And they wanted to call me to Hollywood Helms. That was their idea. And I was like. I didn't like, and even on my Titantron, if you go back and watch that match, it says Hollywood on the back, and it showed like a city view or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, and I didn't like that at all. Number one, there was a very famous guy who just had been called Hollywood,
right?
And it was fucking over huge, and nothing about the way I talk, in my opinion, is Hollywood.
Good call.
Nothing about that.
You're from the woods.
I'm from the wood. Yeah, the wood part. It's just the holly part.
If it was just the woods, Shane Gregory Helms.
Yeah. So I just came out as Gregory Helms. It was very.
Why
would you
like? Why not like Sugar Sean Helms?
That Shawn Michaels guy, I guess. That might have been.
Is there any names left? Can you be Oswald?
And no, I mean Gregory is my shoot first name. I've just never gone by it.
Okay.
My name is Gregory Shane Helms. That movie, the cowboy movie Shane, was playing in the waiting room where I was being born. Mm. And that's why I'm Shane.
Okay.
You know, I just throwing that in there.
Right.
So anyway, I was Gregory Helms that first night. And then we were in like Spokane, Washington or whatever Spokane. We do Spokane and some other town when we do that loop.
Yeah, Tacoma or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tacoma was where the disastrous match happened.
Okay, so maybe it was Spokane. Yeah. So anyway, we got a red eye back, and I'm the same way with you with writing down your finishers. I'm writing down all the names I've ever used,
right?
All the names I ever even thought about using, because I just think Gregory Helms isn't going to work.
Right.
Coming in, you know, trying to be something flashy. It worked later because I wanted people to hate me.
Because it works then.
Didn't it work, but here coming in as somebody new, I needed, you know, I felt like I needed something. And I was the Hurricane Kid for one brief moment in like 1992, maybe 93, when I was teaming with a bigger guy, and I called him, he was called Hail, H-A-I-L, and we were going to be the Stormtroopers or some shit like that. And at right before I went to WCW, when Scott Hall and Kevin made it cool to use your real names, I always thought Shane Hurricane Helms had a good sound to it. And so So I went to them. So the next week, I get there early, you know, and I catch Stephanie before the production meeting. And I said, what do you think about Hurricane Helms? And she goes, you really don't like that Gregory, do you? Mm-hmm. And I said, I just don't. There's nothing to hook on to it there for
me. Right.
And she goes, okay. She goes, well, thank you for the suggestion. And anyway, I go to catering and fuck off for a little bit. And I mean, like 2 hours later after the meeting, and Vince walks by, and evidently she had mentioned it to him, which was a good sign for me. You know, he goes, Hurricane Helms. I like it. And the big, huge, well, the people can't see it, but the big huge thumbs up.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, if you get the thumbs up from him, that's really, you know.
And also the fact he actually does know who you are.
Yeah.
Was nice too.
Yeah, right? that helped out too. So then I was Hurricane Helms, you know, for the invasion angle for a little while. And then,
First of all, how was that for you when you came from WCW to WWE? Was it intimidating?
A little bit, you know, but I've been backstage for a couple of WWE shows with Matt and Jeff, you know, and hanging out, and I knew a lot of the guys. And when I had the whole incident with Bagwell, the WWF locker room just kind of adopted me because of that, and they all liked me. So I had it a lot easier than I think some of the other.
You have to now explain.
Everybody knows what that is.
Yeah, but I want to hear it.
You want to hear my version or his version? Because his version is a lot different than the actual truth. He just told it on Steve's podcast, and I texted Steve, and I was like, you know that motherfucker's lying, right?
Yeah.
He's just like, no comment.
Yeah, right.
He blames me and Jim Bagwell, me and Jim Ross for ruining his career.
But so you guys were all kind of sequestered training together or something
that? Yeah, they made us all go to the Trax, that training center that WWE had. They don't have it anymore, but it's in Stanford, to get used to the ring, because the WWE rings are bigger than WCW, and the ropes are...
The ropes,
as opposed to steel cable. So it's a little bit... I didn't have any problem. I mean, I don't know why we had to be there a week. You know, it took me like 30 minutes, and I was...
You know how why, just to make sure.
Yeah, so we're up there, you know, whatever. Anyway, and Bagwell was being mouthy, and just... You know, I kind of got the gift for gab for that. You know, it's going to be hard to out-talk me when it comes to talking shit, as you want to. And so anyway, he got mad and came and smacked me in the ear. And I had this little, the story is that it's just like big frozen glass water bottle. No, it wasn't frozen. It was a little plastic.
Like a little Evian.
That I was rubbing on my shoulder because I hurt my shoulder working out with, working with Mike Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, had it like I was sitting on my ass with my back to the bottom rope. Not in the corner, just kind of in the middle, and I'm sitting there rubbing that little bottle on my shoulder. And anyway, he's sitting there. Everybody's going to everybody like the boys do, and for some reason, he decided that he wanted to talk shit to me. He instigated the whole thing, and
kind of a bully.
A bully. Yeah. And so I started firing back, and everybody's laughing at my shit, and he's shoot getting hot like a typical bully, that now he's getting embarrassed, and he came and smacked me in the ear. Everybody in there knows that I'm hurt. So I got like one arm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he outweighs me by 50 pounds of pure muscle, too.
Right. Great body.
You're jacked up, and he smacks me in the ear. Now, his version is he came and smacked me right in the face, even though he's on the floor and I'm in the ring. So I don't know how exactly that worked. And I just kind of looked away, and I had that little bottle, and I kind of just threw it in his face as a distraction, because then I hopped out of the ring, and I was going to blast him. But apparently, I threw that thing hard, because it hit his head, and damn blood started squirting. And anyway, and I was all cocked, and I'm coming to get him, and he's doing the Ric Flair, no, type shit. And anyway, then we see this fucking blood, and it really didn't go too much, you know, only a little bit further than that, but that was kind of it.
Were you worried that you're going to get in trouble?
Oh, definitely worried. Yeah, because we're the new guys, you know. We're all worried about the jobs. I'm like, here I am, and, you know, and he's a much bigger star, especially at that point.
Sure.
You know, I don't think historically that might be the case, but at that point, definitely.
Absolutely.
And I'm one of those guys that every time I've gotten a fight, I've always hated it right after. Even if it's well-deserved and I just beat the... And I just do anything, you know, when I don't like it afterward. So I love it during it, and I get all amped right before, but afterward I always say, why am I doing that? Why would I just hurt this human being? You know? I hate it even worse when they hurt me. But when I'm picking my ass up off the ground, I hate it even worse. Right. But I knew everybody, like, we were all worried. We all swore to secrecy, that nobody would tell anybody.
Oh, so was this just all WCW guys? Was there no, like, supervisor? Like
There's a couple agents there, one of which who went and bought my lunch because of the incident.
Was it Arn?
Fit.
Oh, Fit. Even better, of course it was.
Yeah, of course it was. And,
good job, Letty.
Good job. Oh, he loved it. And, you know, so then we got some house shows, like, the week later, and I get to the house show, and I'm over there, like, you're just kind of jumping rope or doing something, and here comes Johnny right beside me. And you got to see I try to do the visual. Here's Johnny right here, and he goes, so, Shane, what happened to Bagwell? And he's like, he gets, like, 1 inch from my face, and I'm like, what the f***? And so I know he knows. I'm like, you know what the f*** happened, man. He goes, well, I got to hear your side. And I told him, I said, go ask everybody else, man. They were all there. It's the same thing, whatever. And he goes, all right, I just had to hear. But so apparently Bagwell's mama called and told Johnny what had happened. How f***ing ridiculous is that anyway? And now that we're talking about this, you know, I'm sure I'll hear about it again. But I've seen him at a bunch of shows. And we kind of laugh about it. It's still odd that his version of the story, he still sticks with that, you know. That's odd to me, but you know, but still, it's God, that was 2001. Well, it's 15 years ago.
My incident with Goldberg, it's like it still rubs them the wrong way, because they ended up on the wrong end of the stick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But which, you were there for that.
I was there for that too.
Holy smokes.
It's one, but I'm one of those guys, man, too. Like, I don't, like, if I'm ever on the wrong end of the stick, I'm like, fuck it. But I came up in an environment where you had to fight a lot. So nobody had, like, this undefeated streak, because everybody got their ass tore up at some point. So if it ever happened, like, it wasn't that big of a deal. Like, Well, I'm gonna whoop your ass next week, you know.
Yeah.
But I was never a guy to ask for a rematch. You know, if you whoop my ass, that generally was enough.
If you win, that's enough.
I'm good.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
But tell me, I've never asked anybody about this. The Goldberg fight that I had with him lives on in my memory. But I've never asked anybody else's memory about it. So tell me that story.
Well, I ran in as a, like, you had him in that fucking front choke.
What do you say? You just sitting there and you hear some, actually, oh, okay, yeah. Because, yeah, you hear some, like, screaming from
I heard some, I heard some yelling rah, 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 rah. And I was like, and I recognized your voice and we were tight. I ran in there and like you were kind of handling your business, and I just, I remember he said some weird thing like your mama joke or some shit like that.
You're a dick, your mama's a dick or something like that.
And you're like, what? And so not only did you kind of like, you know, handle your business physically, then you made him look a little silly with that. And but still he looked ferocious at the same time.
You're like, rip my head off.
Yeah, I was like, God, this is fucking cool. Like, that's one of those things, like, Chris, let's get out of here. Like, I wanted to go warm up the car and like, let's just go, man. Like, that was pretty.
But then we were in the fight or the scuffle, and you pulled me off. You and Christian pulled me off, and you were holding my arms as he was advancing. And I remember saying, like, let me go. And then he came over, and I thought he was going to punch me in the face, and he just reached and started pulling my hair.
That's funny because, yeah, I'm not really big on one for grabbing people in fights because I hate when that happens to me because I've been hit.
Yeah.
When people hold my arms and I'm like,
when your friends are trying to help out, and you're like, you're taking off my arms. Like,
go grab that motherfucker. Yeah, don't grab me.
Or at least grab me around the waist so I can still swing and block and do all that stuff.
So I'm going to say it was Christian holding your arms.
Okay.
You know, I might have grabbed your waist, but I generally don't grab people's arms because I've cussed people out
For doing that. Was there ramifications for the thing with Bagwell, or did you ever hear anything officially about it?
No, you know, JR called me in, you know, and asked me about it, and he'd heard the same version that I just told you from everybody. So, and I told him, I was like, you know, I'm sorry that it happened. I wish it didn't happen. But I said, you need to know that I will never let people hit me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody hits me, then I'm going to fight.
Yeah.
You know, and I want it to happen, and I'm not, you know, I'm not the big man on campus, but that's not going to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had to live like that through my life. I had to do that. You know, I didn't have the don't be a bully program. I came from the don't be a bitch program.
Yeah.
You know, and you had to fight to survive. You know, so not like it's a fucking war. You know, but
still,
it made life easier if you fought back how I came up.
But you said the WWE locker room appreciated.
Oh, they loved it. They came. You know, Ron and John took my bags. From the WCW, because it was segregated in there.
Yeah.
Remember, it was WWF on one side, and the WCW, we had like 20% of the locker room, and we had to all cram in there. And Ron and John came, and they took my bags from the WCW side and put them in the WWF. And I graduated and shit. Like, Savage's music was playing. I threw my hat up in the air. I'm like, bye, bitches. I totally turned on them. And I was like, I'm out of here.
You just hear Bradshaw saying, oh, Bagwell, what happened to you?
I know.
Yeah.
I really hate that happen, but, man, he could have been a big star there. He had everything, in my mind, that Vince likes.
Absolutely. But here's what happened, though, and you'll appreciate this because it happened for a lot of guys. In WCW, there was such an attitude there for a lot of the dudes that everybody, when they came to WWE, had a real mind switch in very, very quickly, a real attitude adjustment. Including myself, not that I had I just thought a certain way, and then you realize you cannot think that way anymore. And I think Marcus didn't ever get the chance to really understand that they don't care what you've done anywhere else
at all
until you walk through this door and walk through this curtain. Doesn't matter who you are, Goldberg, Austin, Triple H, Benoit, Eddie, whoever it was, you had to kind of go through that war of attrition.
I'll tell you who they didn't give a fuck about the most.
Who?
Sugar Shane. He didn't give a fuck about no Sugar Shane.
So the roundabout, finally getting to the question, how did you finally become the Hurricane?
Well, that started with I was doing a backstage skit. We're doing the invasion thing, and now Austin has turned heel. Mm-hmm. You know, like the worst heel run of all time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Nobody was booing him.
Yeah,
they all wanted him to be the babyface still.
So anyway, I got to do this backstage little skit with Austin. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a young up and coming kid at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, back then they didn't write everything out for us. Thank God.
Mm.
And
hard to believe because it's completely the opposite. Where every word has to get approved now.
Every fucking word.
But back then it's just okay. You're gonna see Steve and you're gonna talk about X, Y, and Z.
Here's what Vince said, and you know he's crazy as and when I tell people about Vince, I was like, he's crazy, but it's a lovable crazy. Mm. As long as he's not pissed off at you, like he's insane. Mm. But there's something to me that's. It amuses the fuck out of me how insane is a strong word, but just how quirky he could be. Because mm-hmm. there was a vegetable tray in there. And he's like, you go in, and maybe you eat a carrot. And you and Austin do your promo. And when you leave, maybe you eat a tomato. And so the main direction I got from the promo was that I eat a carrot in the beginning and a tomato at the end. Nothing really about what we were going to discuss. You know, there was some kind of vague, you know, he'll encourage you to go do something with Kurt or some shit. Because I think all I was right. going to go, you know, with Kurt Angle after that. But even again, like when he told me, just to let you know, you go in and maybe you eat a carrot. Mm-hmm. And you and Austin do the promo. And then maybe you eat a tomato. I was just so concerned that they had stuck those carrots up their asses or something. Like oh, this rib. Because yeah. Why is he so focused on these carrots and tomatoes? But I went in there, and the first thing I did was eat a carrot.
You ate that carrot better than you ever ate any carrot.
That carrot was fucking delicious. I deep-throated that carrot. And we start doing the thing, and Steve, you know, like, I don't know what I'm going to say because I don't know what Steve's going to say. Mm-hmm. And he can say whatever the fuck he wants. He's Steve Austin. I'm, you know, Hurricane. I'm just lucky I'm Hurricane Helms at this point. And then when he asked me about the tattoo, I just started talking about the Green Lantern like he was a real person. You know, I was like, yeah, Green Lantern. He knocked Superman out with one punch. Bam. Because Green Lantern had just made a heel turn for all the nerds listening. This is when he made the heel turn to Parallax and he had dropped Superman with one punch. I was like, yeah, he knocked Superman out with one punch, and Deborah popped huge. And Steve is just selling this really good. You know? Yeah. He's looking at her, and he's looking at me, and, I mean, he's really good at what he does.
Yeah, he's got a good promo or two here and there.
And they thought that was funny that, you know, I knew that, I think kind of Brian had said, maybe he'll ask you about your tattoo or something, you can say something. And, like, that was the direction that maybe you can say something.
But I think the idea was that when you, and you might have even have been asked this, but when everyone came in, they kind of asked everybody, what's something discernible about you? Like, for you, it was the tattoo. Had you not had that tattoo.
That tattoo is what led to the whole thing.
Right. Had you not had it, you could be like Mark Jindrak or whatever.
Yeah, who knows what the fuck.
Above average Mike Sanders.
That's such a great name.
The best name ever. Listen, I'm not great, not even good, but I am above average. And that's not bad.
I came up with his name. I was naming everybody's finisher in WCW.
Yeah.
And he needed a name for his finisher. And I said, what, a 3.0? That's the B average. That's above average. He goes, that's f***ing great.
The 3.0.
So he called his finisher was the 3.0. You like that, don't you, baby? And so anyway, they thought that was funny that I talked about the Green Lantern like it was a real person. And so, you know, Brian, of course, really loved it. And so the next couple of weeks when I was doing promo, Brian would go, why don't you just kind of trail off into some kind of comic book reference about something? So I think Brian kind of had this idea, but he hasn't really told me yet. I think he kind of wanted to see what I would do. But I was on board, you know, because I mean, I said, that reminds me of the time but still, I don't know why I started talking like that.
Because that's what a superhero talks like.
I guess, you know.
In the 60s.
I guess, you know. I mean, I've never seen any superhero
any
talk
Batman,
like
Batman. The old Batman show.
That reminds me of the time that the Green. And I would just make up shit, too. Just throw in all the characters that I like. The Black Adam. You know, that was because that's my all-time favorite. And just say weird shit, you know. And even when I did the, what's up with that? Like, that was never like some preordained or premeditated.
Was that from?
I don't fucking know. I was just saying, what's up with that? And I said, what's up with that? With the weird face and the high pitch.
That became your big catch. Oh, yeah, with the lips. Duck face.
And this is way before duck.
Yeah.
This is before MySpace and duck lips. But that kind of happened mainly when I had the mask. because all you could see was my mouth.
Oh,
so right, I had to tell my story with just my mouth. So that's when the her lips really became more prominent. Because that's all I had to work with. You know, you guys got all of everything. I had this much. You know, and so, you know, like I said, I did those little promos for a couple of weeks. And then Stephanie comes up and she goes, Stephanie was apparently the go-to for me.
She was the conduit for you at that point.
And she goes, we're thinking about making you a superhero. And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, yeah, like with a cape and a mask. What do you think about that? And I remember going, I mean, I'm basically in my underwear now, so I don't care. I said, I'll give it a shot. She goes, a couple weeks, couple months at the most. We'll just see how it works. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2001.
Yeah, 15 years later.
15 years later.
But it became almost like you were like became the head of your own stable.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, you got the Four Horsemen and you got, you know, Generation X and you got the Her stable yeah. of your like
the Her band. League.
Yeah, the Her League. The band of, so who was in the Her League?
Lance Storm.
Lance, what?
Yeah, he was Citizen Storm.
Citizen Storm.
They were going to make us the WCW Tag Champions, but I had that stupid European title.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't want me to have two titles, and that's why me and Lance didn't become WCW Tag Team Champions.
What was Citizen Storm? Did he have an outfit?
No, he was just Lance. But I would call everybody Citizen, so he became Citizen Storm. Probably because his name was Storm and I was Hurricane. They go, let's put them together. And I would make him do the one to twin powers thing. Uh-huh. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Fist bumping, yeah.
And then we would, and during matches, I would want to tag like that. And on one pay-per-view, I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm doing this, and he's out there doing this, and I'm going.
Trying to put your hand up.
Yeah, and he never let me live that one down.
Okay, so there's Citizen Storm, but then the other ones.
And Ivory, they always wanted a girl with me, mm-hmm. like my whole career there. Before I got the mask, it was Tori Wilson. And so now I'm Hurricane, and they gave me Ivory. And I had her for a little while, and she was a nut, but she was awesome to work with, though. You know, but she was insane at the same time. And we got Lance, and then I got Mighty Molly. So mm-hmm. that was the four of us.
Mighty Molly.
That was the Hurry League at its full strength.
Right.
You know, and then Molly, of course, turned heel on me. And I would have, they would always team in me with people, you know, which is fun, you know. I wanted to do something where I ran through some of the guys that weren't doing things mm-hmm. and trying to make them be superheroes, you know, and I wanted Hugh Morris to be humongous. Mm-hmm. And I wanted Mike Awesome to be Captain Awesome, you know, look, Captain America with an A and different things, you know. When Scott Steiner, when his big deal didn't, when Hunter was over and they had kind of soured on him a little bit for whatever reason, you know. I suggested something where he would be my Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the photographer, and we called him Big Paparazzi. And he, I to this day, I think that would have been over. I think that would have been, especially if he would have been like taking pictures, but he's the paparazzi who beats them up.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to take this f***ing picture, you know, and yanking people around and take the picture.
Big Paparazzi.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
To me, it is. I don't know. It might have been.
No, throw in the, what was the Funaki gimmick supposed to be?
Kung Funaki.
How's the song go?
Everybody love Kung Fu Naki. Do, 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 do. That bitch be drinking sake. That's the original version. We had to edit it. You know, Jim Johnson refused to give me songwriting credits for that.
They actually did do a Kung Fu Naki song.
They did the song. And when they made him Kung Fu Naki.
Wait a second. They actually did make him Kung Fu Naki.
Yes, they did.
Wow.
And here's how that happened. I was riding with Adam. The Canadians all adopted me for whatever reason. It was either I was riding with you or Adam and Edge. That was mainly in Lance.
Yeah, Christian, yeah.
And Adam and Edge, both of those.
Yeah, both those guys.
And so Adam's driving, and Funaki and maybe it was Taka, I don't know, but it's Funaki driving and some other people. And I look over there, and I just, Mitch Hedberg style, like I do. So what if Funaki's first name was Kung? And Adam about ran off the road laughing at that shit. Kung Funaki? And he just starts, and then just I break out into that song. Everybody love Kung Funaki. Dude, the bitch be drinking sake. His body is short and stocky. He drives a Kawasaki. And that was the whole song. And so then later on, you know, fast forward to how many years they finally make him Kung Funaki. And my whole pitch for that was because they had Steamboat as an agent there, that Steamboat is trying to teach him karate and shit.
Yeah.
And he would be terrible at it. He'd be, you know, trying to chop the board and hurt his hand and do all this shit. But then finally it works. It matches, you know, and something to do with Steamboat, too. Because he was, you know, you did some good stuff with Steamboat. Fucking, yeah. And they actually let me produce the segment that he revealed that his first name was Kung.
Ah.
You know, they very cool. You know, a lot of cool things they did there. So anyway, when he made the song, you know, I emailed Jim Johnson and said, hey, I don't know if you know this, but I actually wrote that song, you know, so.
But the actual song is based on a 70s song.
Yeah, it's based on it, but the words, they okay, still so they still use my lyrics.
But your lyrics.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I wrote the lyrics, not the notes.
Yeah, I got you,
not
but they wrote different music for it,
And I was like, I don't want any money, you know. I mean, I'm not sure how much money that song would have made anyway. Yeah. But I wanted the just to have that on the resume. I wrote, you know, a little songwriting credit.
Yeah,
I think
just
for my own personal benefit, that would be cool. And he refused to do it.
Refused, like no?
Refused to acknowledge me. Wouldn't email me back, wouldn't return my calls. And I'm talking about several calls and several emails. And I was very, I was like, that's that, especially in the music industry, as you well know, that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
If somebody writes the lyrics to the song, they get credit for that
That's
shit.
Right.
You can't just decide not to give it to them. And I know it might seem, you know, minuscule.
It's
to,
not
to the, people
it's
listening.
Your song. You wrote the lyrics.
I wrote that. I made that gimmick up. That was my shit, my idea.
Yeah.
And he just completely refused to do
nothing.
It. And I hate that motherfucker to this day. Although he did do good with that Hurricane song. When I needed some, because they had some generic hip-hop beat for me in the beginning. And they had the stand back part, which I had Vince.
But stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
And let me tell you about that. Vince is in there producing that segment because, you know, when you do a new gimmick, if he's on board, he's going to be instrumental in producing all this shit.
Because you were flying over the city.
Yeah,
the
that was upset. I tore that thing down, too. They got these things hooked to me and this green screen, and I was supposed to act like I'm flying. And one time I just fell right off of it, and it ripped the whole set down. And they had to redo it.
So Vince is producing.
And now Vince has got me up in this microphone and goes, all right, I want you to say, stand back. And he's got just such a thunderous, powerful voice. And I'm doing as best as I can. And that right there is as loud as I can get.
Right.
You know, I really wish I had one of those loud Steven Regal voices or something.
Booming voices, yeah.
But I just don't. Like Braxton. I wish our son's got a thunderous voice.
Oh.
And I wish, you know, but I don't. I was just trying my best. And finally I had to say, Vince, that's as loud as I got. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, it would be stand back. There's a hurricane coming through, and it's stand back, not stay in the back, which still a lot of people think.
So it was that. Stay in the back?
Yeah, stay in the back.
That says your accent.
I guess.
Stand back.
But why would you stay in the back? What does that mean? I don't even know what stand back means, but I think it makes more sense to stay in the back. In the back of what?
Yeah.
And but then it has some weird hip-hop beat, and like I went to him and said, is there any way I can get like a superhero theme? Well, what do you mean? Because I'm a superhero? I don't know. It's just a random thought. But anyway, he made up the dum, 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 dum. So that worked.
And it was perfect, yeah.
Yeah, that was perfect. So he did good in that, but he did me on the Kung for
but you...
He f***ed me on the Kung for Naki.
But you know what's funny, though, is and this, I still use this example to guys in the locker room today. Like, for example, Zack Ryder just won the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, never really did anything for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I always use the example, and I might have even told him this or somebody else, like, listen, it might be a month, it might be 6 months. One day Vince will walk by the monitor and see you do something and go, why aren't we using that guy? And I said, because that's exactly what happened with Hurricane. Because you did that one promo, I remember, with The Rock that suddenly led you to beating The Rock or Triple H or something. And remember that? It was almost like you had been doing these promos and getting really, okay, you're doing fine. But one day, you did the promo with The Rock, and then boom, you're like main event guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the story around that?
It was just going to be that promo, and that was it. There was no long, drawn-out thing.
And this is when like you're kind of hiding in Rock's dressing room or something, or the Hamburglar?
No, this was the first one. The first one was the one he called me the Hamburglar, which was fantastic.
Rock called you the Hamburglar,
Now, it was just going to be that because Rock was working with Booker.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a little program with Booker. And then he was going to go with Steve at WrestleMania.
Right.
And that was his thing. And so at the end of the night, there's going to be a battle royal. And this was in Toronto, actually. Toronto has always been super good to me for whatever reason. Nightlife, baby, don't worry about that. This is back in the day. But also, they were the first town to ever chant my name. Hurricane was in Toronto. And that's a weird thing to remember. But
you never forget it.
You never forget
it
at the same time. And that's where I do the thing with The Rock where I come in. It's the first time. And he's like, who in the green hell are you? And it just worked. It was one of those weird things that, for whatever reason, it worked. You know, And he put over, you know, I have one of those gimmicks that if you don't put it over, it's not going to work.
Right. Yes, exactly. You
know, this wouldn't have worked in WCW at all.
I said that about New Day. You have to play along with that gimmick mm-hmm. or else it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, it's why, you know, Glacier and Canyon and Wrath didn't work in WCW because those guys, the other guys wouldn't put it over. You know,
yeah.
Hall and Nash out there laughing at him and shit right like away. That. It'll
yeah.
kill it.
Yeah.
You know, and that would have happened, you know, the Undertaker, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That gimmick works because of how,
sure
what got the Undertaker over to me more than anything was when Kamala was afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like that right there said, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I remember that to this day, Kamala running and taking off and jumping over the guardrail and I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like that's what got the Undertaker over to me,
right.
to Shane House. But we do that one pre-tape, and after that pre-tape, Kevin Dunn later that night said that was the best pre-tape in the history of the company.
Wow.
In the history of the company. He said that was the best, funniest. Yeah. He probably meant funniest. But anyway, coming from him, who I don't even really know,
uh-huh.
you know, and he goes, seeks me out and comes and tells me that. So I was real happy about that. But later on that night, and we get in the Battle Royal, and The Rock's out there. He's laying people, you know, laying the smack down on a couple people. And when he comes to get me, I start firing back on him. And Toronto just explodes. You know, a lot of this happened because of how the fans react. Because
the reaction, were you talking about physically firing back at him?
Yeah, when I start firing back on him, when I start punching him,
yeah.
they come. And
because everyone loves the underdog. They don't expect you, like, just the fact you're in there in the ring with The Rock and getting offense on him, they never expected it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and they like you already, so it's like.
They like me already, and then the pre-tape, like I said, the promo, the backstage thing earlier was really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And that got over good. So when I get in there, and even though, you know, he ends up beating me down or whatever, like, I just remember going to the back. I was like, man, they had to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you always hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we yeah. both have been in situations where. We both been in situations
the
where
right
they
there.
Had to know that yeah. that was good, and yeah. then nothing ever happens. Right. But I was like, man, they had to notice that was hot. So luckily they did, and we just did a couple other things. And when we do the one in the locker room, that was actually my idea that I'd be hiding in that thing.
Oh, like actually hiding like in a locker or something.
Yeah, because we were kind of going over it, and I was just going to jump in like always. And then those lockers was over there, and they all had curtains on them for some weird reason. And I just go, what if I was hiding in one of those? And you could just see him, you know, Brian's eyes and Rock's eyes all popped up. And Rock did something on that pre-tape that was interesting to me, and I never forgot. He kept blowing the pre-tape. Like, he kept, like, flubbing his lines and shit. And I was just going, huh, I don't really know. And then one time he kind of flubbed when he turned at me and gave me a slight wink. He kept breaking it on purpose so that we would have to do it live. And now we don't have to go 90 seconds. Now we can go as long as we want.
Smart.
Well, he can go as long as he wants. I'm the sidekick here, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I remember that little wink like it was, you know, yesterday. And so we do the whole thing, and I gave him the line when he takes the phone out and he goes, "Hey, it's nothing." He says he knows you. That was my line. I gave him to say to me. And I remember him thinking, you know, he thought that was cool, you know, because
yeah.
that's how it is. You know, if you got a good idea, it's
yeah,
like,
sure.
you know,
yeah, it's all that matters is that it's a good, segment.
I'm the one getting a rub, you know,
yeah.
I will help this
shit
out.
The better the segment is, the better it is for you.
The better it is for all of us.
Yeah.
So he appreciated that too. And we had a couple more, and then we had the match. And I was doing media day, like on a Sunday. And I was in my hotel, and I went to the, as luck would have it, I leave my phone in the room and I go to the, you know, get a drink out of the vending machine or something. I come back and I missed a call.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Rock saying, "We, you know, me and you going to work, you know, Monday night, main event, Monday Night Raw in Cleveland. You're going over, you know, have your bumping shoes on or some shit like that," whatever he said. And I remember thinking, this is a rib. Like, this is like Jason Sensation or somebody.
Yeah, right.
Somebody with me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was just like, I had no idea if that was really him.
Mm-hmm.
Just no idea. You know, unknown caller or whatever it was,
yeah.
block caller.
Always would call that way, Rob would call that way, yeah.
And so I had no idea it was really him. And I get the TV, you know, and this shit's going to be on. He was awesome, man.
And what was the finish?
He had me down as he goes to hit the people elbow. Austin's music plays.
Right.
He gets distracted by Austin, powerful schoolboy, which is the most over finish in the history of the business.
Completely.
And 1, 2, 3, and I'm out. And here's where I made a mistake, because they kind of told me to take off. I really should have took a moment and stood there beside Steve.
Yeah.
But I was so at, you know, that's when you have to be selfish sometimes.
Yeah.
And But that's been one of my weaknesses, is that I'm not. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just did what I was told, and I took off. But I should have took that moment and stayed there. And I
to really get that team with time. Because what I remember, and we laughed about this,
was you got the 1, 2, 3,
and then we never see you again except for you jumping up the ramp in the back like a little leprechaun. Like the two dudes are in the foreground, and you're just kind of popping around. Like, is that a hurricane running around like a little guy up Yellow Brick Road?
And you can even see Austin almost like tried to grab me. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, even he knew, but he was there when I got the direction to roll. Take off. And so I did what I was told, but that was one of those things too, you know, just I'm the new guy there. Yeah. I don't want to piss anybody off. I just beat the Rock. Yeah. I'll take what I can get.
Yeah.
In a perfect scenario, I should have at least stood there beside Austin for a powerful 1-2 beat at least.
Was that the peak of the Hurricane character?
I would definitely say that night. Yeah. Whether, you know, I know people, 15 minutes of fame, 15 seconds that night, I was one of the most popular wrestlers in the world.
Yeah.
So I'll take that. I'll take that.
Out of all the wrestlers ever to be able to say that.
For that particular moment, that was the most popular wrestler in the world. So I'll take that. You know, I know it helped the merchandise sales. You know, they were always good. You know, they really peaked after that. And I did really well. You know, I worked with Hunter and Flair. I had a little program with Flair after that, which was, you know, that meant a lot to me because he was the man in North Carolina.
Sure, growing up in North Carolina.
You know, so that meant a lot to be able to work with him. And
we had a great time. We were talking with The Rock. We went on that tour to Japan. It was,
you know, that's one of my favorite points of watching you work. Because you were the champ.
Mm-hmm.
And in Malaysia was when you had the balloon that was your only friend.
Yeah.
And like
after the match, we were doing like a 20-minute promo, me and The Rock, and I found someone had a balloon that floated in the ring. I grabbed it and said it was my only friend.
It was. I remember that. You remember it too. That was, I had never drank in my life until that tour.
That was the first time?
Yeah, y'all tried to kill me. The first time was
9/11.
It was 9/11. And not to be celebratory, you know. I always had to tell people.
No, because you had to do it because
everybody did a toast. Everybody did a toast that nobody.
Oh, okay.
We knew, and nobody close to anybody we knew had been lost. Because a lot of the company was from that area, New York, and they worked up in that area. And so it was a big, you know, toast in a lobby, Houston, that nobody we knew had lost. Nobody in our immediate families or anybody that we knew, whatever. And so I was like, oh, shit, I gotta do that. And Matt's little ass goes and tells Michael Hayes that, you know, Shane's never drank before. Like, and I had full disclosure, I had taken a shot at the movie premiere of Ready to Rumble.
Okay, great.
You know, so, but this was the first, you know, and so here comes Michael Hayes with like either Jack or Jaeger Bomb or some of that shit that he drinks. So I was like, hey, kid, have a shot with me. And I didn't want to do it, you know, but that's Michael Hayes. I just did one. Now I can't say no, so go. And then here comes Undertaker. Hey, kid, do a shot with me. Damn it. And so I didn't know that, you know. And so fast forward a couple hours later, there's a strip club right next to the hotel, and I got Matt on stage in the Walls of Jericho, which is funny because you're here. And, but I woke up the next day and no hangover, no nothing. And, like, we had drank all night. It's my first time, and I got up and said, "What's the big deal?" What's the big deal?
So then we went to Japan.
We went to Japan, and you tried to kill me.
Well, why did I try to kill you?
I think you hate me. And I remember, like, it's always been a rule of mine too. Well, I didn't have to have that rule before then, but since then, never go to the ring with anything like that. No, don't go to the ring drunk. You know?
Oh yeah, of course.
And I've seen people, you know, having a beer or something backstage, you know, and I know beer's a lot less, but still, when I go to the ring, you know.
Yeah, no, that's not right. You know, anyway, shape or form. Yeah.
But that particular tour, I was drunk from the night before, and I'm still new at this shit. And I remember in Malaysia being at the Kurt going, holy,
yeah,
you know, or I think Malaysia or Singapore, one of those nights, but you tried to kill me the night before. And do you remember pushing me through the curtain?
No.
Yeah. I was at the curtain, holding on to the curtains for life. Like, I'm still like, I don't need to be here. And it probably wasn't as bad as I thought, but I'm new to it. So,
yeah.
And you push me in the back, and I stumble out. But luckily, it looks just like that silly hurricane walk I did anyway. And then I think Dean didn't tell me about that I had pyro on the poles. So I slide in the ring and do my little spin, and then the pyro goes off, and I about shit on myself in the ring. But then that kind of sobered me up because it scared me so bad. And I was like, oh, shit.
What happened was we were working, and there was three great crowds. Tokyo, first time we'd been back there, like in 10 years, we sold out the Yokohama Arena. Then there's Singapore, Malaysia. And I remember I was like, okay, I was a champion. And I was like, I'm going to try and do what Flair used to do.
Yeah.
Because I was working with Rock and we had great chemistry. So we're having like 5-star matches, whatever that is.
5 stars.
Then go out and drink till have a 5-star after party till like 5 or 6 in the morning. And then we had to fly every day because it was a different country.
Mm-hmm.
So straight to the airport, straight to the venue, wrestle the match, straight to the bar.
Yeah.
And it was you and me and Bubba and Shane O'Mac.
Yeah.
It was a little gang.
Yeah.
The DWMs. Yeah.
And I worked for Naki, and Funaki like carried the match, and everything was fine. You know, I was actually okay once the match started. Like somehow it all came together, and I was jumping off the top rope, and everything was fine. But that was the first time you guys tried to kill me.
We were gargling Jack Daniels. That was the big trick of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Shane had a problem with that. So the gargling.
Yep.
I beat him.
I caught on to that shit. I play country dumb. See, that's always been one of my tactics. I let y'all think I'm dumb, but you know better. Right, baby?
because you'd be gargling it, and I'd learned this from Kurt Hennig. While I was gargling the Jack Daniels, I was letting it drain out the side of my mouth,
mm-hmm.
but you couldn't see it if I had my head pointed this way. And so Shane, I would because gargling Jack Daniels is the worst. It's really bad. Like when it will get you drunk.
As opposed to even just drinking.
Which is awful. Gargling it is worse. So I would gargle it for like 10 seconds, and then Shane would be like, 10 seconds is nothing. So then he would do 20 seconds. And then I would gargle for 30 seconds, but not really, because I would let the stuff slip down the side. But even just having that taste in your mouth. Oh. And then it just kept going back and forth, and I was able to get rid of this stuff or just pour the shot right over my shoulder, which is another good one. And he lost that round, so it was good. And then there was a time we were on the plane where you gave me your snacks.
Yeah, this motherfucker.
It still bugs you.
Yeah, it does bug me.
It still bugs you to this day.
Yeah, it does. Little things bug me. Yeah. You'd be amazed at the big shit that I forgive, but little tiny things I'll carry on for life. Those trail mix things that I buy, I still to this day buy them things.
Yeah, big bag of trail mix.
You know, it's like the M&Ms and the raisins and the peanuts. Like, well, you know, and I bought them so that when I wake up, I can have a snack because it's a long-ass flight.
You're going somewhere, Japan or Europe.
Yeah,
or
he's right across the aisle from me. I wake up. And he's over there turning the bag up like the last little bit of crumbs right in his fucking mouth. And I'm going.
But you said I can have some.
I say some. See, that's a very important word there. And it is not a synonym for all. At all. And he's sort of like, what the? It's like a bukkake video. The shit's just coming. Hey, man. Did you eat all my trail mix? And he's like, oh, man, I'm sorry.
You said I could have some.
And so now my hungry ass.
That still bugs you to this day. That's a good one. Now. And the other road story that I love was when we were in, was it Manchester, England, in your hotel room.
What was, oh, no, no, no.
Was it Manchester?
That Manchester?
Yeah.
No, it was like London? Ireland or Scotland or some shit like that. Yeah.
Everyone was hanging out in your room.
In my room.
Yeah. And then ran down the hall to go to somebody else's room.
Yeah, there was some debauchery going on in another room. Shenanigans.
So everyone leaves your room, and I'm the last one in there, and I'm like, wait a second. And dude, what did I do?
You f***ing destroyed my room.
I didn't destroy it.
Everything was turned over.
Well, I just took everything I could. I took all the I took all the sheets off the bed, all the pillowcases. I took the shower curtains off. I took anything that wasn't tied down. I just took into my room.
And you put some of there was a lot of shit in the closet.
Oh, the closet too, right?
And then you did something. And a shower curtain. I didn't even know because I couldn't even stay in that room. Do you remember why?
Why?
The blood stains on the mattress. We all come back to that room. From going, there was some shenanigans going on in this room down the hall with people who can't be named. And we busted in there and witnessed these shenanigans. Then we run back. And in that moment of time is when he decided to my room up. And it's actually funny when we get back because we're all in a state of mind where anything would have been funny.
Yeah.
And then we just happened and we're kind of laughing. And I look over at my mattress and there is a blood stain like the size of a human. Remember that?
Yes. It was like, that's right. I'd taken all the sheets off and didn't even look at the mattress. And there was a huge like body, like a criminal crime scene blood outline.
And where the head would be was the dark. Like somebody got shot in the head. That's exactly. I was like, So I didn't even sleep in that room that night. But the next morning, I had to go to take a shower, and I remember I got the water just the right temperature, you know, because there's the overseas, that shit's never like it is in America, you know. Yeah. The hot is like the volcano in Lords of the Rings, and
then it goes to cold like in a second. Yeah.
And you're doing all that kind of shit, and then I tried to pull the curtain, and there's no curtain, there's no shower curtain. I'm like, what is all of this? And that's when I realized you had took the shower curtain down too, and you wanted to throw my TV out the window. And he's like, man, this would be funny. He said, throw the TV out the window. I said, no, we can't do that. And you go, how would they know? And I go, if they come to my room and there's no TV? And you go, oh, yeah.
It was like, because, yeah, I wanted to throw the TV out of your room. But the windows there only open like 2 or 3 inches. Yeah. You know, those shitty windows in York, in the UK.
But you were determined that we could crank that window.
And listen, if we take the TV and throw out the window, how will they know what room it was thrown out of? Because I come in the room, see no TV, they'll figure out.
You go, oh, yeah.
Let's move on to the next thing. So now you are, I wanted to talk about this as well, about you're an agent in TNA.
Yeah.
Which, now that you're on the other side of the coin, mm-hmm. first of all, how did that come about, and how do you like doing that?
Well, you know, I did a couple, I did a little bit of that in WWE with like dark matches and
really?
Just some of the undercard guys. Yeah, just helping them out, but also actually getting on the headset. And
officially? Or just kind of helping out?
Just kind of helping out. Nothing where it was going to lead to anything. I was just right there, and maybe I wasn't doing anything. But mm-hmm. especially after that Gregory Helms run, you know, the big negative about the Hurricane thing is when you're so good at a comedy gimmick,
you get typecast.
And it's so funny that they think that's all that I am. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember, and that's a lot harder. You know,
to play that character.
All the you know, there's so much credit given to the tough guy characters in pro wrestling, and I think that is the actually easiest thing to do in our business, is to be that tough guy character.
Oh yeah,
that's the easiest thing to do, to go out there and act tough.
Yeah,
I think anybody could do that, but to go out there and be an entertaining character that has layers and personality and all that different shit, that takes a little bit more talent. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. I think stand up comedy might be the hardest form of entertainment.
Why?
Because you going out there and people are just staring at you, make me laugh, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to do it.
Right.
That could be very daunting and very tough. And it gets, for some reason, the least amount of credit. You know, Steve Martin was talking about, you know, and Eddie Murphy, maybe the Nutty Professor, where he does all the scenes around the table.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Nutty Professor.
He's like, clumps. How did that not get an Oscar nomination? How did that not get the award for what he did? Because it's funny.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's true. Name the last comedy that won,
hardly,
you know, picture
ever,
of the
year. I mean, you
if know, ever, and probably in the 40s or something. Right?
You know, hardly ever. You know, like maybe like I think Forrest Gump did something. You know,
if that's even a comedy. That's more of a.
It's a comedy drama. I mean, yeah. There's funny parts. Yeah, the book was funny. The book was a lot funnier than the movie. But it's a very uncredited thing, and it's, I think, the hardest thing to do. Like the Hurricane was. It seemed easy, but comedy's hard to do mm-hmm. in pro wrestling, and I know that because you can watch every week, and there's a lot of
bad
people trying
comedy,
to be funny,
yeah.
Especially in a violent scenario mm-hmm. or even a simulated violent scenario, to come in and be funny, to be consistently funny. You know, it was difficult. And so now when I'm Gregory Helms, and all of a sudden, you know, and now I got to make people forget that I was that guy.
So you, because I forgot, I'm sorry, so you switched from Hurricane to Gregory Helms mm-hmm. as a... Now as just a heel.
Yep.
As a kick-ass heel.
And I had a private secret meeting with Vince. You know, like, I didn't want merchandise. I don't want T-shirts. But I need you to take care of me on these pay-per-view checks. And to his credit, they did. They really took care of me as far as paying me for pay-per-views. Because I don't think there's been more of a significant drop in merchandise sales than from Hurricane to Gregory Helms. Because nobody, that Gregory Helms shit wasn't flying off the shelves.
Was your Hurricane, was it making a significant difference?
Yeah,
in
at
checks?
One time I was a number three guy.
But so does that translate? Like, does that translate to a real big chunk of change? Because I've never been a merchandise guy. As a babyface,
really?
I did okay. I mean, I did okay, but to me, it's always about video games and action figures. Because once again, as a heel as well, I don't let them make merchandise.
My action figure, I know my first one, Jack Specific called me, and I was their number one selling action figure of all time.
Wow.
Now, somebody might have Cena or Ray,
sure,
or somebody
sure.
might have.
But that translated to the number on the check. Like, mm-hmm. you'd see it and go, wow.
Yeah,
really,
oh, yeah. My first royalty check, I thought they made a mistake. And I was afraid to cash it. I was like, what if I cash it and they're like, motherfucker, you know that wasn't yours, and you cashed this shit, and I get like charged for. I was like really afraid, but then I said, "Fuck it, I'm gonna go cash this month," and I went like bought a house and.
So from the hurricane to Gregory Helms,
but at Gregory Helms you couldn't buy a deck of cards, you know. You couldn't, but I wanted that because we didn't have any of that. We have, you know, the tweener here. The business has really become a merchandise thing. It's such a part of it that there's no. Heels that actually get hated. Like I had people storm the ring on me, two instances. One in which, you know, the cops came and we had all this big deal, people storming the ring on me.
Actually trying to get into the ring.
One of them made it in Jonesboro, Arkansas. They made it in the ring and I had beat his fucking ass. And then they were going to make me go back because the cops, you know, were going to press the charges and all this kind of shit. And luckily I got out of it. But that was, you know, we're talking to Vince, so like, you know, most heels, especially today, even more so than then, they're just tweeners.
Mm-hmm.
And but we're losing that because there's no real heel, so there's nothing to be between.
Right.
You gotta have that those people and the tweeners will probably still be that main event, but you need those tweeners somewhere that people really hate, and that's gonna make those tweeners stand out.
Right.
You know, Tully Blanchard was the heel. It wasn't Arn. Nobody hated Arn. We hated Tully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we hated Buddy Roberts. You know, those might be two of the greatest heels I think in the last 40 years. You know, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted them to hate me. And if you're wearing Gregory Helms shirt, then you don't hate me. You like me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was trying to get, you know, and that's what I wanted. And I think I was really successful at it. You know,
who were you working with at this time frame?
I was the Cruiserweight champion. Okay. So that was a detriment because they weren't bringing any new guys in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was trying to get, Austin Aries hired. I tried to get El Generico hired. I tried to get other guys. And they just kept saying, well, who's down in OVW? And I'm like, No, but I don't know any of those guys. You know, I've tried to get them to bring, you know, guys that were doing shit. Because how many times can I beat Jamie Noble you know, I think Jimmy Yang, you know, they really didn't know what to do with him. It's really weird because he could do things in the ring that nobody else in the business can do. And we need to exploit that. We need to use that. But they really couldn't find a way. Brian Kendrick was the guy I thought that I could have the best program with. But he was stuck in that tag team with Paul, and they wouldn't break them up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really kind of stuck, you know, just kind of beating these guys up, the same guys all the time. You know, it was super crazy and psychosis and the whole run of the litter. And Vince was really behind that. That's the only time I thought he was behind the Cruiserweight division when I was in that company there. And it was going good. But then when I started working with, you know, with Benoit and Bobby Lashley and Booker, and I had a really good match with Undertaker, which to me is one of my best performances. And if you look at the match, I kind of just get my ass whooped. But that's what I was asked to do.
Sure.
You know, my direction.
The art form of it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's when I hate these 4 or 5 star matches, when I see those ratings anywhere, because they don't know what my assignment was.
Exactly. You could have a 5-star match getting, quote unquote, squashed if it's great and that's what you were told to do.
Yeah, I was told we need The Undertaker to look as dominant as he ever has.
Mm-hmm.
And that match, like the second my music plays, when I walk out, just everything, just my demeanor, how upset I am that I'm even in this match. I'm about to get my ass whooped and there's nothing I can do about it, but I got to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's literally one of my favorite performances. And I just get, you know, and I mean, I can, you know, take a like me. So I got a little bit in, That was all good. And but I came to the back and got a standing ovation, you know, and Vince didn't throw those out. Not to me.
Yeah, not to anybody.
You know, he don't throw those out freely. And I mean, that big standing O and that big thumb, and later, and like the next week is when he told me, it was after that match, he told me that we got to get that belt off of you. Mm-hmm. Talking about the Cruiserweight belt, because, you know, that I was.
It's a detriment to it.
Yeah, it's a detriment to me at that point. And but I was just really, I think I was one of the best heels going at that particular point in time, you know, maybe not. And like I said earlier, the legit heels, they won't be, because you need Rock Austin, you need Jericho Rock, you know, you need the tweeners are going to be the main guys. But, you know, it's like if you watch Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter wasn't the heel. Mm-hmm. Buffalo Bill was the heel.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, Hannibal Lecter got his own TV show.
Yeah.
He got sequels, you know. We kind of think he's the heel, but he's the tweener. But if you got that Buffalo Bill character, and that's who I was, and now I don't want anybody to think I'm, you know, tucking my junk. I'd vertebrate me. I'd choke slam me.
Yeah.
But that's what I was going for, you know. And that's something in TNA now I've been working with Matt on. You know, make these people really hate you, you know.
Because you and Matt started so many years ago, now you're actually helping to guide him.
Yeah, well, Matt threw my name out. As far as I know, they were looking for new agents, and apparently my name had come up from a couple different people. You know, whenever I go to shows, I'm always trying to help people, you know, and like my Omega shows have been really good, and I agent every match. Mm-hmm. You know, Omega isn't an indie show where you guys come in and can just do whatever the fuck you want, which is what basically all indie shows
right.
do. And that's why they're so chaos, you know. I'm telling the story from the first match to the end.
Yeah.
And that has been really well. So
let me ask you this. I mean, you're talking about how you have a good qualities to be doing this. Is it hard to be, because I'm a TNA fan, I always have been, and I think actually the stuff that you guys have been doing over the last 6 months or so since you've been in there, Billy Corgan, all those type of guys, it's been good stuff. But is it behind the eight ball with some of the perception of the years of stuff that's going on there?
That is the worst part. Our biggest enemy is the ghost of TNA's past.
Yeah.
That is what we're constantly like. And I'll actually talk to some people. Sometimes they just piss me off and I tell them to fuck off, you know, on the Twitter box or whatever. But so I'll ask guys, well, when's the last time you watched it? Well, I haven't watched it in a couple of years. Well, then fuck off. Judge that. Yeah.
Because you guys are doing everything. Like, I'm a big Billy Corgan fan mm-hmm. from years before to now. And obviously yourself and some of the new talent that you have in there and some of the, you know, the Mike Bennett's and that sort of a thing. And there's a lot of positive stuff. It's just like you said, I almost wonder if the smartest move would be to just change the name of the company to something completely new.
Maybe.
Is that name TNA branded a certain way? Could you ever take it back to the promised land, you know? Because the elements are there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think maybe that's kind of why we call it like Impact. I think that might be kind of testing the waters to see. But that is, you know, that's very frustrating to have to deal with that. I call it the Nickelback syndrome. There was some reason. I think have I told you this? Is this why you
laugh? Haven't, but I'm smiling because I know what you're
there was doing. Some reason that for some reason the whole world just decided they hated Nickelback.
Yeah, same thing as Creed.
Yeah, just
Creed had that too.
I mean, there was a point when their songs on the radio every week, number one hits. They're the soundtrack on Spider-Man, the soundtrack everywhere. Everybody's loving Nickelback, and then the next week some memo went out that I didn't get, and everybody just hates them, and I don't know why.
We used to say about Creed. Creed sold 30 million records, and I don't know one person that has one.
Right, yeah.
Right? No one was.
It just became cool, and like you don't really hate them, but everybody else is hating on them, so I'm going to hate on them too.
Yeah. What's the plan just to keep fighting and forcing forward?
I think that's the only thing we can do. I look at it in the same situation in WCW. I can't worry about the business end of it. You know, I'm going to go there, and I want to help put out the best in-ring product that we can. And that's where my involvement comes in. And I think if you watch the show for the last year since I've been there, there's been a definite upgrade.
Yes, I agree.
And actually in total show quality, too. I think we give it – it's my favorite show, and not just because I'm there. I still watch everything. You know, I love New Japan, you know, but that's wrestling. Yeah. You know, that's a great product. But I think I like that just because of the mystique of Japan sometimes.
Still, yeah.
You know, that's still like from my, you know, childhood mystique that I loved. You know, I like a lot of what Lucha Underground does. I don't like all of it, but I like a lot of it. You know, I like so many friends of Ring of Honor, and I like what they do. But I think the
secret is you're starting to do it again. When TNA was hot. At the peak, it was homegrown stars like Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and then Chris Daniels and those guys. And now you're getting that again with EC3, and then we're talking about Mike Bennett. You're talking about some of those other.
I wish one of our weaknesses is how we mic the crowd.
Because
if you could have heard his reaction when he made his the babyface turn actually happened in London, or I mean it was in England, so it was in one of those towns. I mean, when he came out, dude, that was reminiscent. That was the old school. Shit, man, when he came finally showed back up, that place went ballistic, and I couldn't wait to watch it on TV, and it still didn't translate as well. I get so angry when
again, that's the production of the WWE, which nobody can beat.
Nobody.
And everything will always be compared to that, like Ring of Honor's, like bringing on a TNA compared to WWE, it's night and day.
But nobody compares anybody to WWE but TNA.
Yeah, right.
That's one thing we always had to deal with too. They talk about all these other companies that are supposedly better than TNA. It was like, well, why don't y'all compare them to WWE? Because you never do. Right. You only compare TNA to WWE, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
But I can't hate on anything. You know, I'm a wrestling fan. I was like, I don't care what letters come before it, and I've always been like that. You know, I grew up if there was wrestling on, I was watching that shit. Too, I didn't care what. You know, with WCCW, which is world class, whether it's AWA, and I would watch AWA on ESPN when it was terrible, but it was wrestling and I was watching.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to see WWF till I was in high school. You know, my first year in high school was when I, Yeah, and I got to see Savage and all that, you know. And I was grew up on NWA Mid-Atlantic and World Class, and like I said, AWA on ESPN, and finally got to see WWE. Yeah. But I would watch anything. So I really wish fans would get past that, but some of them can't. Mm-hmm. And but that's why I like team sports work, because that's why fans, they get behind their team, and that means you got to hate all the other teams.
Well, it's like you said, too, all that you can do is just keep putting on a good show, and it has been a much better show over the last 6 months and a year or so. That's the best way to do it. Just put on great performances and great shows and great programs.
Yeah, I'm not worrying too much about what dirt sheets say, you know, so I never really have.
Last question.
We're going to do more questions. I'm going to ask you some questions.
What's your favorite match that you ever had, if you had to pick one or two?
I one of my favorite finishes is losing is me to you in Halifax.
What was it?
Because WWE would always make me wrestle Canadians in Canada.
And I was a heel.
And you were the heel, and I was a babyface. And they would do that, you know, as a backhand, not in a backhanded, but sort of a compliment, because the fans wouldn't turn on me.
Yeah.
They would turn on so many of the other babyfaces.
They weren't
going to
turn on you, right?
They might not cheer me against you, but at least they wouldn't boo me and shit on me.
Yeah.
And Chris is out there. He's doing everything in the world to get this crowd to turn.
Every cheap trick in the book.
He's poking me in the eye. He's pulling my nose. He's taking his wrist tape off. He's choking me. He's flipping the crowd off.
Yeah,
fuck.
They tell him
he's
shut
doing
up.
Everything. They ain't having that shit. They're pulling. And you were the first Canadian of the night.
And I don't think I've ever been to Halifax before or since.
Or since. He's doing everything in the world to get these fans to boo. They ain't having that shit. They're Y2J, they're Jericho, whatever. And luckily, and even when I would do some stuff, they were kind of a little bit of a cheers for me. You know, they didn't hate me, but they were pro-Jericho. And so the finish was, he's going to put me in the Walls of Jericho. I was going to struggle to the ropes once, maybe even twice, finally tap out after this big heroic struggle. He put me in the Walls of Jericho. Your ass was barely settled. And I said, I was tapping right away. Yes, I'm getting out of here. I remember you going down and you were kind of giggling and you're like, good call.
Like, well, I ain't waiting for this.
I tapped out so damn quick. Like, yes, you win.
Oh, man.
I have favorite moments. I don't have favorite matches. Yeah. I remember seeing Muda coming to get us in WCW. And just being transfixed, just watching him going, holy, that's Muda. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time I got to do anything with Flair, just seeing him and I'm coming to get his ass, you know. The match with Rock, I guess, you know, if I had to pick one, that's got to be the one, you know. That did the most for me as a career. And I've never had a top guy take, you know, do that much for me as he did. Him and Flair did the most for me, you know. But moments like that, The Undertaker, that was cool, because anytime I worked a top guy, you know, yourself included, I came out last. So I never got to see your cool entrances.
Oh.
And you Rock, Flair, all them, they were, for whatever reason, you know, I came out last. But with the Taker, you know, I got to go out first. So I got to see it, and I got to, which also helped that performance. And like I told you, if you ever get a chance, man, it's a short match.
Yeah.
And it's Gregory Helms versus The Undertaker.
Okay.
When that music plays and I go, oh, you know,
this guy,
God damn, you know, that was really cool.
Oh,
so
man. Well, dude, it's great talking to you, man.
When we gonna do part two?
What's up with that?
What is up with that? What's up with that? Thanks, man.
Thanks to Hurricane Helms. Always great to relive some of those crazy road stories with him. And if you want to see what he's been up to, check out Impact Wrestling on Pop TV every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, 8 p.m. Central. You got to check out the amazing stuff with Matt and Jeff Hardy. The Final Deletion was on tonight. If you haven't seen it, go online and see it. It's one of the bizarrely wackiest things I've ever seen. It could be on Adult Swim. It's so crazy, and I loved it. TNA doing some good stuff over there, and Shane Helms is behind the scenes. He's an agent working with all the talent, so check out TNA, and thank you so much to my old friend Hurricane. Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through, and stand back. Mark your calendars. Remember, March 15th, 2017, it's the biggest podcast ever. When Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, 251 days and counting until the biggest podcast ever. So countdown, check that out. And one last thank you to all you guys for supporting the great Talk is Jericho sponsors, including audible.com. Go to audible.com/Jericho for a free 30-day trial and audiobook. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 10% off anything you paddle choose for a limited time, including the new collector's edition of the Resurrection of the Jake the Snake documentary. And of course, go to the OG sponsor, Amazon, easiest way to support the show. Use them Amazon links anytime you do any online shopping. The links
podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got them links for the USA, the UK, the Canada. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs and become a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. Buy something, and then you'll take a picture of it, and then you post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet it and follow you. All right, go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening to the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. Thanks to Hurricane Helms for being here last week. Scroobius Pip, if you've never heard of him, you don't want to miss out. Super funny conversation with England's number one podcaster. And then, of course, the Canadian rock show. My old friends, Todd Kearns, Brent Fitz, and Solo Cup Jeff talking all things Canada. Super, super funny show. And we got a good one coming up on Friday. Oh, yeah. I got KISS drummer Eric Singer. He has been with the band longer than any other drummer they've ever had. Eric Singer from KISS is going to be here as I slowly get every member of KISS, past or present, on this show. Eric Singer not only played for KISS, he was with Black Sabbath for a long, long time, Lita Ford, Badlands. He was a journeyman for 10, 15 years before he ended up at KISS. He's been at KISS for over 20 years. He's a great, great storyteller. He's going to be here on Friday, so we are looking forward to that. We'll see you then. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. See you on Friday.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.